Welcome to the DevCon Archives, featuring top sessions from the latest DevCon, which took place in Bangkok in November 2024. These episodes spotlight some of the best talks from the largest Ethereum developer conference, showcasing the technical advancements, mission, projects, and novel ideas shaping the Ethereum ecosystem. All talks have been recorded. You can find them on archive.devcon.org. Let's dive into today's featured talk.
Good morning, everybody. I'm Stefan Kobut. I'm the founder of Stereum and RockLogic. And we will do a workshop together to set up an Ethereum node with different kinds of services. First of all, some facts about us. RockLogic was founded in 2012. Not actually as a blockchain company, but an IT infrastructure company, DevOps company. We developed Stereum since 2020. So already before the genesis of proof of stake of Stereum happened, we started with the development. We're institutional node operator, so we use Stereum also for our own operations, which include the staking efforts in Lido. We already performed a couple of security audits for Stereum to ensure that everything is running fine and we don't overlook some major security vulnerabilities. We also won some awards. I guess the most recognizing, at least in Austria, is the Austrian Blockchain Award 2021. And this year we founded a separate company for this great product. And also this year we launched Stereum Plus, which is in addition to Stereum, a hosting service that you don't need to care anymore about where you get your own machine for Stereum. So some use cases for Stereum itself. Stereum is open source. Everybody can look at the source, of course. And everybody can use it in whatever way they want to. It's MIT licensed. It means you can also fork it, rebrand it, whatever you like to do with the source code. It's up to you. Some use cases, of course, are staking. We, as mentioned, use it for ourselves, for our own operations with Lido and other protocols. There are also protocol node operations for Obol and SSV, so it's very easy with Stereum to set up a Lido CSM operator as well as Obol or SSV operators. Then it's also possible that you run your own clusters with Obol and SSV. In case you don't know, Obol and SSV are DVTs, distributed validator technologies, that help you spread one key, one validator key, over multiple servers to ensure more reliability, more resilience to technical issues or other issues that you might face. Of course, you can also use Stereum as an RPC node. Maybe some of you guys already use Infura or some other RPC provider, and you know that you're limited with them. But with your own node, you're basically just limited by the hardware you're putting Stereum onto. We have users that run arbitrage bots on it. We have users that connect their MetaMask on it. That's pretty easy and will be explained also later. Of course, you can start developing your own decentralized app with Stereum, because you have the full range of RPC requests that you can use, as well, of course, as WebSocket. And of course, Stereum runs everything you want to. You're not limited to the stuff that we provide you. You can also come up with custom services that you integrate pretty easily. That will be also explained a little bit later on. As you may know, Ethereum has multiple clients. First of all, we have execution clients and consensus clients. Both clients are needed to ensure that you can run a full node or an archive node. We support most of the recent clients, most of the major clients. We also look always into some smaller clients, but up until right now, they were a little bit too unstable to integrate. And we want to make sure that the user has a seamless experience in running an Ethereum node. So how do you run an Ethereum node? First of all, you can run it on cloud or on your home PC or your office computer, wherever you want. Of course, with cloud, you have AWS, GCP, Hetzner, and our new product, Ethereum Plus, of course, which makes it very easy to use with Ethereum. With ARM, it's a little bit complicated. You could run a full node with Raspberry Pi 4, but it's a little bit slow, so I would not recommend it. If you want to use ARM, I would really recommend the Auroch B5B or the Orange Pi 5. It's a much smoother experience, especially on mainnet. With x86 machines, generally just choose a CPU with a benchmark over 20,000. That's, for some, that might sound a lot, but if there are some network issues, then you will be happy to have some more CPU power to actually deal with these issues. 60 gigabytes of memory are, in my opinion, a must to run on mainnet. Everything below that, it's already a pain. 2 terabyte SSD. I want to emphasize SSD here. Old HDDs, they don't work well with nodes, also not with full nodes, like, and especially not with archive nodes. 2 terabyte might be a little bit on the short side for the long run, as well as too less for some of the clients. We know that some clients don't prune very well, like delete all old data that they don't need anymore. We would, if you want to be like future proof, then go for 3 or 4 terabytes. That's way better. But 2 terabytes should at least give you a head start and make sure everything runs smoothly in the beginning. Ah, sorry, wrong button. Okay, then, thank you very much. Welcome to David.
Thank you very much. I'm taking over. Thank you. Thank you, Stefan. Okay, as this is a beginner's workshop, we now want to go into the whole staking process. We want to walk you step by step through it because we have enough time. And so the next point is staking with Ethereum setup. So there are 4 overall steps you have to do for to stake yourself. First of all, you have to have 32 ETH, but that you already know. Maybe that will change in the future, but at the moment it's 32. Then you have to create your validator keys with a seed trace. We will show you this today with a tool called Vague. Then you should do your validator setup, so a full node run with a validator that you can do with Ethereum, but there are other tools as well. Then afterwards, if you have a running setup, you should load up a validator key with the 32 ETH. And of course, always should start with testnet if you're new to the stuff. And the 4th step is then afterwards, enjoy the journey. Okay, so I try to emphasize the whole process again in a picture. So you create here the key. Then after you have a running setup, then you you give the withdrawal address where the 32 ETH you will be sent back, and where the attestation rewards and the sync committee rewards will also be sent, in which wallet. So it's kind of safe after you load it up with the 32 ETH, because if you ever exit your validator key, it will only go to that wallet. So yeah, you're safe afterwards. Then you after that process, after you loaded up the key, you have some time to be after you deposited the 32 ETH, you have some time to be approved on mainnet. That's, I think, around 7 days. And in the meantime, you can start a validator client and set the fee recipient address. So that's another possibility to earn rewards. And there you get and the fee recipient is a wallet where you get the block production rewards. Okay. So how now to create a validator key? You might be interested. There are different tools we will use today, Vagu, and maybe as I will show you, you shouldn't do it because you should do it on an extra machine, best set up only for creating a key with no internet connection whatsoever. But for today, as we do it only for test, I will show you on that. So Vagu is an open source tool I think you can easily find. As I said, if you're a beginner, you should use a testnet for staking. Holeski is really pleasant to use. And then, first of all, you need to create a new recovery phase. And as you see, the tool already warns me that the internet is connected. So you should really emphasize on that. So you see, it's really easy to do. Just create a secret recovery phase. And then, like every seed trace, you should write it down, put it in steel so that you can't lose it, and never ever share it with anyone except your wife. Okay. Takes up to 30 seconds or longer. Yeah. Ah, okay, yeah. Could we? Oh, yeah. That's hacker tools. They're only always dark mode. So. But maybe that's also securing the seed race in some kind. Okay. After you have written it down, you have also here the option to copy it into a file. As I said, I wouldn't store it on any digital device. I would really craft it in paper or in steel. But I will copy it now for the ease of the process. Thank you. Everybody, I wouldn't now go back because then we have to do a next seed phrase, but I think from now on we're good. Okay. So then you go next. It really asks you again if you backed it up. I'm sure that I'm lying. No, then you have to confirm that you have this secret recovery phase. So this tool is really good. It really makes sure that you're safe. Now you can check it. And you can use your seed phrase for generating more than one key. And what's the cool thing is you can also generate further key if you're in need on a later time. So just remember the seed phrase, put it in here again, and then you can say how much keys you already created and the number of new keys you have. Yeah, it's so I set the password, and if your withdrawal address, you might want to take your own one. Perfect. Already some Holeski Eve here. Ah, okay. Take a password that is longer than 8 characters. And remember it. Better write it maybe also down. So, and then you're done. Just have to say where to put the files. I will give it there. And create them. And I should have created an own folder. Okay, that might take some time, and in the meantime, yeah, we done the setup. You can also see it in the slides. The QR code is shared, I think, afterwards. So there's the whole tutorial again. And we're done with creating the validator key, so the next thing is to doing the setup. The validator setup. Okay. Ah, yes. Here. No. Yes. So I'm done. Yeah. You get two files. The one is the deposit file. You will use to. To load up the validator key. I will show you, or I will walk you through the process as well as there. I walk you there. We will use Launchpad for that later on. Okay, lights are. And now we are starting to use Ethereum and making our node setup. So. What you need is you need a Ubuntu server machine that runs on the newest Ubuntu version, stable version. You might also use other Linux distributions, but it's not tested, so we can't guarantee you anything. Then just give in to the credentials and. If you give the credentials the first time, there's this option to save it with the plus sign, and then connect. And of course, first load down the Ethereum launcher, which you can find on our website or in the GitHub. So let's see. Okay, and now you can see how really, really easy it is to set up a Ethereum node. Because we have this one-click installation, but of course, if you want to do something more fancier or expert, you can do your custom installation. Or even you can export a configuration after you have set up an Ethereum node with Ethereum and unimport it there. So you can, but we will go up for the beginner session today with the one-click installation. Okay, we have the first step is to select a network. We support, of course, Ethereum mainnet and both testnets, Sepolio and Holeski. And we also support Gnosis mainnet, so you might want to start staking with Gnosis. So it gives you also a good feeling and works exactly the same or very similar. So we are starting with a Holesky testnet today. And now you have different options. You just can set it up for as a staking node. That's the vanilla staking setup everybody is talking. If we are talking about staking, there's also the option to do a math boosted version. So you have a client installed that helps you to connect to relays that will help you to math boost. So that's a maximum extractable value. So the block building is done by relays, and you get a little bit more of rewards because a whole entity is a little bit faster than probably how you set up the block yourself. Then we already talked, and if you afterwards have questions to it, we can show you a DVT setup. So that's where the key is split into four parts, or more than four parts, and every entity is taking and syncing and agreeing on their work, and then it is deployed to the network. So it's kind of safe, and not every part of not every node in this have to be up all the time, so they are a little bit risk freer and not so reliant on the on the uptime. Yeah, we have an own setup for Steerum on ARM, as we said, for Raspberry Pi or a little bit better machines. It's a little bit of an experimental stuff, but try it if you want to. It worked quite well. Then you have the archive node, fully set up, and then we support protocols like the Lido DVT protocol, where you can do node operations for Lido, emphasizing the DVT protocol, so you get one share of a key and do node operation and securing the and do staking for Lido. And what's quite new and starting in early adoption phase on mainnet is the CSM, the community staking module, where there is some kind of bond. You just have to add a bond and create the keys, and Lido will load your key with 32 ETH, and then you get parts of the rewards or shares of the rewards, which is quite good. Yeah. So I will take now the vanilla staking. It's always possible to add stuff in the expert mode, so we can show you afterwards if you want to go from staking to MAV boosted, for example. I will show you afterwards. So, and after you made your decisions, you're almost set completely. What you now, as we before said, we are client averse, so Their setup is chosen randomly. It chose randomly GAF, which you shouldn't use because it's running good, but it's the mainly adopted client, and for decentralized reasons, we should take something else. So you just click on it and choose something else, for example, Bezo, and you can do the same thing for the consensus client. So instead of Prism, I can use Lodestar. And the validator client is set as well. Normally, you set up your Ethereum staking node with consensus and validator client from the same developer. Yeah, and there are other services installed as well that visualize what is happening in your node. So, and after you click next, you only have to choose a checkpoint sync, which is we have preselected sources that we know work quite well. but you're also able to sync with your own checkpoint if you want to. So you can use a custom source. And yeah, that's only an overview where the things are stored or installed, and then you can press next. Okay, in the meanwhile, while everything is setting up, what you will see in a moment, I will shortly tell you a little bit about Launchpad. So if you have created your validator key and if you have your setup ready, then you want to load up your validator key with 32 ETH. And for beginners, we would recommend you to use it from the launchpad from the Ethereum Foundation. And there's a really, really easy setup. You have to choose which net in the first place. So I'm using Holesky. And then it will really walk you to everything. It makes a lot of, it explains everything again. It makes a lot of checks if everything is set up correctly. It warns you. I think it's a very nice way just to memorize everything again and deep dive into staking again. But you might as well click through it. But it's really, I would recommend you to read a little bit into it. It also tells you about the risks, the early adopter risks, etc. There's a checklist involved, so there's really some cool stuff. And then in the end, you confirm. And then you can choose your execution client. We set up Bezo. And get the documentation. Then we took consensus client Lodestar. Yeah, right. It's kind of optional. What you choose there, then the number of validators. Then you set the withdrawal address. We already talked to. It should be the same as in your key files. What's your current operating system? Yeah, and then download the keychain GUI app we already used, so it's also recommended from the Ethereum. Oh, no, come on. There you can find it also, so that's probably something good. Yeah, and I'm keeping my keys safe. And now you can get your deposits. File. And keychain is very user-friendly, so it already tells you which file to use, so you use the deposit file. Open it up. Every information is stored there correctly. And continue. And everything you then have to do is connect your wallet. Of course, probably if you're doing the real thing, you should connect with a hardware wallet. But you as well might use MetaMask. I don't have now 32 Holesky ETH, so I will finish here. But you then press continue, and everything is set up for you. Okay, so now look back to the Ethereum launcher, and we see everything has started running. And at that point, I think I will hand over to David.
Hi. Okay, nice. Thank you, David. I'm also David, so it's pretty easy to remember. I'm gonna show you I'm gonna show you how the staking page works. I'm gonna show you the rest of the setup itself. I'm gonna show you some management options. At the end, I'm gonna ask Martin to join me for some questions. You can ask whatever you want about staking. You can also ask me personal questions, but I would refrain from that. let's just see. As David already explained, basically you deposit your key. As soon as you deposited your key, this key goes into activation queue. Usually takes a few days. During this time, you can basically, but you can already, if you want to, import this key in the setup itself. So to do this, you would go on the staking page. On the bottom, as you can see, there's like a click to insert the key. As soon as the key, you basically click this, you select the key itself. I cannot read this, I'm a little blind, I'm sorry. You basically select the JSON key file, you go into Öffnen, and then you would basically go through the other steps. As I can see, we have like a little bit of a thing here.
What did you use as password?
Yeah. Okay, that's a good password, thank you. I'm gonna go here. Bam. Bam. On the bottom, as you can see, you're already like inserting the key. On the bottom, you can select which validator client you want to import to. Steering gives you the option to run multiple clients at the same time. When it comes to validator clients, I would ask you, please, if you run two validator clients, never import the same key in both clients, you're gonna get slashed. That's just how it is. Slashing is, especially here, usually not that much of a problem. I know a lot of people like are really intimidated by the idea of getting slashed, but it's usually really, really rare. Most people you see getting slashed, or if you see someone getting slashed, it is because they thought they were too smart or wanted to like build a backup system that got online suddenly, or tried to like do some great engineering stuff. I can tell you, when you want to stake, keep it simple. Even if you go offline, okay? Let's say you go offline for 1 hour, you will get back the rewards. Basically, you lost in this 1 hour, in 1 hour. So it's around the same time. And if you get slashed, there's no. This happens basically immediately. So there's no good. You cannot recover from this. So keep it simple. Try to like stay with one client pair if you're especially if you're a beginner, and don't go for multiple validator clients. If you wanna do a backup system, you can do this by like running an extra execution and consensus client pair. You basically just change the connections. I will show you this after as well. You can do this inside of the UI as well. So we just select here the client we wanna import into. In this case. See if I get the password correctly. 1 second. So put in the password. You can see, you click there. Then you have the option to import with a slashing protection database. At the beginning, when you first set up, you don't have a slashing protection database. You get this if you remove a key from a validator client. You have the option to download the slashing protection database. As you might like guess from the name, it's supposed to be an extra layer on top of this. You also have the double ganger protection running. This is basically every client, as soon as you import a key, basically checks the chain if the validator key attested in the last two epochs. This can take, depending on client, actually quite long. I think Teku is the longest. I think it could sometimes take up to half an hour. Some of them are really fast doing it. If you have like, if you're in a hurry, you can always deactivate this. I will also show you how to do this. In this case, as I said, we don't have a slashing protection database, so we're just going to import it here. And basically, it's just going to run through. I hope I did like did the password correctly. And as soon as this is done, it's going to just it's just going to be imported. You can do this before the activation queue runs. Yes, perfect. You can do this before the keys through the activation queue, meaning as soon as you went through the activation queue, you're already online. So you basically just import it, wait wait till it's activated. It's just going to be automatically online, and then it's, then you are basically attesting. On the staking page itself, as I said, want to go through some like other features, like some management features. On the staking page itself, you have the option to like just open BeaconChart.en. It's just a quick link. It's the most common used tool to get like a network view on your node or on your key. Because in this case, you have a node. It's a peer-to-peer network. Okay, it's not seen. It's not seen everywhere. The BeaconChart basically gives you like a good overview of how the network sees your key. You can also copy the public key. Basically, an identifier, quite common. I think everyone here knows what a public key is. You can give the validator key a name. This name is, if you have multiple friends, you all want to stake on one node, you can give this one name. Let's say you have two keys, you give one, you can call name one like your name, you can name one the other. It's just like some management options. You can set a block fee recipient for individual key. There's also the usually what you do is set up a default fee recipient in the validator node client settings. But if you don't want to use this, as I said, if you have multiple key, maybe you stake with a friend to get on one machine, you can like set it up in a way that your block fee recipient for your key, also your block production reward for your key is sent to your address, and the block fee reward from the from your friend's keys to send to their address. Then you can always remove the client validator key, always remove the validator key, and you can also easily like exit and withdraw. Just click this button. It sends a, it creates an exit message, gives it to the consensus client. Consensus client broadcasts it to the network, and it's basically it. It's already exited. You then go through the exit queue. Also takes a while, so. If you have like huge swings in the value or price of ETH, you might wanna. It's hard to like plan ahead in this case, but you won't be able to like instantly sell it or something like this. So keep this in mind, please. You also have the option, as you said, this is for the individual key. You can do the same for the whole client. So you can set a blockchain graffiti actually. Whenever your node produces a block. You have the option to like include a small message in there. This could be anything. It should be up to 32 letters actually. In this case, what we usually do is set it as default Steerum.net. It's also basically if you go on BeaconChart.dn and you put in like Steerum.net, you will see how many blocks were produced by people who are using Steerum and didn't change that. As I said, you can change this whenever you want. It's nice for us to have like some numbers, but if you just want to like have a fun message in there, that's absolutely fine. Also, the option to remove for all every single validator key from the client. Option to withdraw every single validator key from the client. And as you can see, there's also the option to import remote keys. We support Web3 Signer. I can say personally, I don't use it, and I don't think any one of us uses it, because with this, it's basically really, really easy to switch between the client pairs. Anyway, what people usually use the Web3 Signer for is like they use this as a little extra layer, so they can import the keys into the validator client and it's just switch it up. But if you want to do this, it's just a click. You can show this off. It's just a click. You can do a local one. You can also like choose an external one if you want to. So if you have the Web3 Signer on an extra machine, you can just put in the UL to the machine itself. On the right side, you'll see a little bit of some stats. As you can see the epoch. You can see the slots, the current slots. On the bottom, if you would get if you would be part of the sync committee, or you would be part of the, or the block production, is like going to be soon. You will see this on here. This is basically like an extra help for you to know when you have to do updates, because block production is kind of rare. It's basically once the chance to do this is one in 150 days. So you get it on average twice a year. Some people are more lucky, some people are less lucky. It's basically a lottery on top of the attestation rewards you get anyway. So you also have the option to group these. So if you have, like, as I said, if you have friends or you have multiple, or you do some staking for other people, you can group their keys as well. You would basically click here, then click here. You can filter the clients. This works with public keys and the names you can set. And you can also just switch between the showing the names and the public keys. So now we're going to go a little bit into the node page. It's probably a little bit more exciting. Stereum supports you having actually multiple configs at once, or we call them as setups, meaning you could, in theory, run a Holesky node and a mainnet node on the same machine, given your machine is strong enough. They obviously need still the resources they need. In this case, we only have one setup. David just set up. It's basically setup one, where we can go in. You see the three client pairs. Base is already syncing. Loadstar is already synced with the checkpoint sync. And you can see also, like the VC has here, it's one key. What you usually would do after going through the setup is also set up a default fee recipient, because you need this. If you don't set the default fee recipient and you produce a block, you're going to burn your block reward, basically, which is nice for everyone else. They're like happy about like losing some ETH in the network. But for yourself, you're going to like bite yourself in the ass, basically, because, as I said, one in 150 days, especially if you use MathBoost, this could be quite some money. We ourselves like produce blocks. They are like multiple hundreds of ETH. Obviously, usually it just happens when we have like a hack on the network and some hacker sends it like as fast as he can. It doesn't care about the priority fee at all. You would basically get this if you send it back. That's like, I guess, your decision. I never like got the process quite. But what you would do is you would go in here. You see here default fee recipient. You would just replace this OX00 address. Then you would confirm and restart. You can see we can set the gas limit here. This is actually important. There are current discussion like to set this higher and lower. Then we have the double ganger protection. As I said, the double ganger protection is supposed to protect you from slashing yourself, also getting slashed through the keys. It's like just an extra layer. If you would import and it like detects that you tested in the last two epochs, it will basically just give you a warning. Hey, are you sure you want to import this? Obviously, you can still import it, but usually it's a pretty good warning. You should probably keep that in mind. If you don't want to wait, also, as I said, some clients really need long. Like if you're in a hurry, there's usually no real reason to do it, but if you're really in a hurry or like have multiple hundreds of keys, you can always like deactivate this, also just confirm and restart, and then it would just like import it without doing this check. As you can see, also really interesting, we built the whole thing in a way that you're capable of like seeing what it does actually, if there's like a small task manager. So you can always just, if you run into like any error, for example, could be it's a client software, it's in development. Usually, like sometimes they're stable one release, sometimes they get unstable the next release, then they get stable again. It's nice, obviously, that they get still like this that much like development time, but this leads to some could lead to always like some problems during the version. If you run into a problem, we usually recommend you to just check out first if the in the task manager you can copy this data. You can come out on our Discord, you just copy it in if it's an error. You can always also go in for the clients themselves. You can always go into the log pages. The log pages are basically your bread and butter when it comes to maintenance. whenever you run into any problem with the clients themselves, you will basically find this in here. You can switch through the clients themselves. This case, as you can see, we're already like syncing here on Loadster is here syncing. It just tells you the errors happen quite rarely. Usually, this not usually only breaks if you have like a blackout, for example, or you run into any like syncing problems. If you run into syncing problems, we have an easy command to do this. You can always go into the resync button. It's basically the same as the thing in the setup themselves. You can, if you want to sync from Genesis, I don't recommend this. It's also not recommended by the client teams to do that, because A, it takes forever, and B, you just sometimes you could run into problems during the syncing from Genesis. Then you can you would just select like a checkpoint sync, recommended one. You go with, for example, Loadstar or something like that, and it basically just deletes the old database and attempts to sync from this checkpoint itself. Some other things we have. We have like a link to the documentation. So if you're interested to like configure your node a little bit more deeply, maybe you use it for development. We do this. We have like the option in Styrium. You can in the settings themselves. You can go into the expert mode. It's basically a Docker compose config, a little bit of a glorified one. You can see, you can like set up the options here. We give you the full control. But if you play with this and you break your node, you basically, I think, you know what, we hope that you know what to do. That's why we call it expert mode. You can like add from the documentation some stuff if you need, like, for example, longer block retention. You want to change some like parameters. You need different namespaces for development, or want to get different data. You can do this. Basically, set this up in there. The next one, we have like a simple start and restart button, pretty basic. And from this, this is basically the node page. What David explained to you also is you can go with a Math Boost. It's really easy to set up. So this is now a solo vanilla staking one. If you, let's say, you decide after like a week of running this, hey, actually, I want to use Math Boost. You don't have to set up the whole node again. You just go in here. We have like a edit node page. You would go in here. As you can see, this is you can see here the connections. You can also change these connections. On the right side, you have the option to just add stuff like MEV boost. Oh, okay. You can choose the installation path. Then you would go next. You choose your relays. These are obviously different on mainnet, and they are depending on the network you're currently on. You can take all of them. There's usually no reason to not take all of them, because MEV boost takes the best block from these relays. It just chooses this automatically. If you're American, you might want to go with the OFAC compliant one. I don't know how. I'm not an American. I don't know what happens if you don't, I'm really honest. But just going to go with all of them. Then you would go next. You have to connect this to a consensus client. You can only connect the MEV boost to one consensus client. If you want more MEV, if you have more consensus clients, and you have to add more MEV boost services. Then we go with Loadstar. We confirm, and as soon as we confirm the changes here, it basically is going to install this. It's going to connect all of this, and then your node basically chooses, or your consensus client chooses, if usually the MEV boosted block first, the one that's suggested by MEV boost. If it's not fast enough to do this, it will just take the one that's actually provided by its own execution client. As you see, you have like the small like little icon here to indicate that you are like connected with this. You can always change these connections inside of this. So let's say if I wanted to add another consensus client, like Lighthouse. It's the same path. You choose the installation path, you choose the sync options. In here we can also go for like just checkpoint sync. As I said, I would recommend this to use this always. Client teams recommend you to always use this if you don't need the data itself. You go next. You can connect this with execution clients. If I had more than one execution client, I could basically choose this in here as well. In this case, I'm going to just go with the Beza one. It's the same thing. I just confirm the change. And after this, I'm going to show you how to modify the connections, meaning let's say Loadstar would fall out for some reason. Could happen. Then I could like pretty simply switch to using Lighthouse with like two clicks of a button. See, I'm gonna go in here. I can obviously also delete this. I can switch the client itself out. Usually don't recommend doing this either because you have to do some config changes as well. So if you're an expert, you probably could use this. If you're a beginner, delete it and just add it new. It's basically the same time. It doesn't like take any longer. You can go here into the modification. And just as you can see, if I wanted to change this, I can just go here. And now it's as soon as I've confirmed the changes here, it uses the Lighthouse client instead of the Loadstar one. So you can build multiple client pairs. If you have the storage and the resources on the server itself, you can build multiple client pairs, run them on parallel, and then just switch between them. You can do this over multiple nodes. You can also multiple servers. I can show you this in a second as well, as soon as we are through this. Takes a little bit. We have like the option to make this a little bit easier. So you would go in here. You can go here for external. If you can write it, external here. You will set up our external source. There's a little bit of a difference between the clients. All of them are the same except Prism. For Prism, you have to set the extra value, though this is going to change soon as well. So soon this is not going to be a client selection anymore. This is going to be agnostic. The external source, you would basically set up an IP, like a server IP with the port. You could go in here, just set it up. I'm just going to put something in there. It's basically like a placeholder you then can connect your client with. Meaning if I had another machine with another IP, with a port to access the client inside of my network, I could run multiple servers, multiple client pairs on one server, I can run an execution client on one server, I can run a consensus client on another, a validator client on another, and just connect them through this, and then just switch depending on actually my own needs in this case. Also, again, takes a little bit, but it's quite fast. So if I wanted to now use the external one, I would go the same way, go in here, select the external one, confirm, and then just go further. So David talked a little bit about using the node export option. You can, if you run the setup, you would just click here. It would basically give you this one setup. Let's say you want to migrate your node, you have a new machine, okay, and you're a little bit lazy. You can, it also doesn't take that much longer, but you could just click here. You would download a zip file with the configs. You would go into the setup again, and then you can just with the import config option, just import this zip file, and then it just sets up what you had before. You obviously have to import the key again because we don't have your password. We don't like store any data. You don't send any data. This is like pure your stuff. And you also have the option to like import like a single config. This would import all of them, export all of them. As you can also see, we use Grafana and Prometheus. We have like a nice little control page. It's basically it just gives you a basic view with really really simple stats. If you want to go more complicated, you can always build your own Grafana dashboards if you want to. We deliver the client Grafana dashboards with them. They are basically default and default to use. You can set the alerts in Grafana. You can actually get some external notification going on in there. You can see you have here the current sync status. It loads your nodes view on the network. Usually, I don't recommend taking this as as the most source of truth when it comes to the network status, because it's just your own nodes view on the network. If you want to actually know the network status, please visit Beacon Chart at the end. Great tool. You can see on the right side, you can use your RPC provider. Because Ethereum uses SSH to connect from your launcher to your server, you have to open the tunnel here. Then you can copy this string. We'll put this, for example, into MetaMask. I could show this. We will take this one. You could go in here. You have the network option. If you go in here, you go in here. You can go in here. You should go. Where is it? I haven't done this in a while, I have to be honest. You would basically go into the options themselves. Okay. you would just put this for the RPC connection. You would put the ETH symbol. You would choose a blockchain explorer to basically show you the transactions and how they are used. Can you go? Then you obviously also have the WebSocket endpoint and the data API. This one is from the this is provided by the execution client, the RPC. The WebSocket and the data API is provided by the consensus client. If you run multiple ones, you can switch through them. You can also see here a little bit of stats from the key client themselves. Some of these are currently wrong, because your key obviously didn't start the testing and it didn't go to the keys to the queue itself. When it comes to updating, because you constantly are having a node is mainly maintenance. Maintenance is really really easy with Ethereum itself. You have two options to do this. You just as soon as there's upcoming hard fork, for example, you would just go in here. And you can update your clients. You have multiple update options. You can go with your server OS updates. You can Ethereum consists of two parts, the launch and the node. So if there's a new Ethereum release, you will have a new launcher version. This usually happens as soon as you open Ethereum. It's going to go into auto update mode. It just downloads the newest launcher version automatically. You would then log in, go into the node updates, could just download it here. If there is a service update, let's say GAF has a new version, you would see it in here. You could just click it. You can just also update all at once, except the server OS updates. They're on an extra page for good reasons, because it probably is going to restart your node. A lot of people don't want to do that. If you are really interested, we have a lot of people who actually, Ethereum provides you with the option inside of the server management page. You can switch through the servers here as well. As you can see, we have multiple ones. You can also change your password here. You can set up, you can create the SSH key. You can delete SSH keys here. You can manage these as well. And you can do the Ubuntu updates here. Just gonna check for them. If it's going to find some. Nope. But with Ethereum, you have the option to always go with the automated node updates. These are actually going to pull down all the Ethereum node updates and the client updates. We have a lot of users who put this on and then never look at it again. works quite fine. We also have like some nodes we have this open. They still attest to this day. So even if you're on your way, let's say you travel a lot, this is like an easy option to actually check your nodes. You can and automatically update it without having to constantly look into it. We also have an experimental 2FA feature. To use this, please do actually these. There's still some problems with it that we are currently working on. You also have the option to like just add a new server connection here. You can switch through them. If you have a SSH key set up, you can actually go with a quick switch, which is really, really nice. With this is the update process. If you are a little bit of an expert, we have the option for you to go into a secure shell. So you can actually also use this here. You don't constantly have to switch between terminal and stereo. It's just for us. We built this especially for us because it gets annoying after a while. Then you also have here on top a help button. So if you need any help, you can go from here. We have like a GitHub, obviously, open GitHub, so if you find any mistakes, please be so kind and just report them. And we also have a documentation itself. We also have the option for the notification. We support two things. We have like a small little mobile app. It's really, really small. You basically set up a Grafana alert. This comes over encrypted over relay to us, and we will send this out. But you also have the option for the more common, what most people use, is a beacon chart at the end. It's not hard to set up. You basically click here, then you would select your validator client here, set the machine and the API key up. You have to set the API key on the beaconchart.en website itself. Then the updates are already showed, and you have also the settings. You can change some languages. We translated as much as we can. So if you are not an English speaker and know someone who is not quite that much of an English speaker, you can also use this. And yeah, the option, maybe if you run into problems, what we usually do, or I at least usually do, if there's like something breaking my node, I'm a all or nothing kind of guy. I like to just nuke the node. We just basically press here, and this kills the whole thing. You can dump your logs here as well, and as soon as I click this, it's just going to delete everything on there. It takes a little bit. It's quite a nice animation. You can thank that guy here for that. Just takes a little bit. I'm going to then show you some of the other options we have as well. Like just go through them one by one, and then I guess in 5 minutes, if you have like some questions, I would love to answer them all. So, just get down to this node again. This is now a nuked node, meaning as soon as I go in here, I go basically through the whole process again. It's just gonna check, is there a node installed? If there is no node installed, I'm just gonna go through this page again. The options are pretty, pretty simple. In this case, I don't have much time, sadly, to show you the other stuff. If you're interested, we can always talk about it. But the basic like difference is this installs extra validator client. SSV uses not the standard validator client. They use their own validator client to do this. OBOL uses an extra service that is connected to your validator client. So if you go in here, you would like see here, this installs the OBOL Charon service. The Stereo on ARM, you can basically, this is installing just the node clients without monitoring services. The archive node usually just sets extra stuff in your expert mode config, so you actually retain the blockchain data. And the Lido STVTM modules, both use SSV or OBOL respectively. And in the end, we also have the Lido CSM itself, where we have like the validator ejector Lido uses, we have the Lido Keys API, and the CSM monitoring service we built for this, as well as an IPFS service to just keep the data for a while. So, okay. With this, I would say like we have like 15 minutes left. I would love if you, any of you guys have any questions. We're going to answer them all. Marta is going to help me with more technical questions. It's not quite my forte. So,
hi. When you use this installer for ARM devices, when you would like to deploy an Ethereum node on ARM devices, because you have very limited resources, for example, yeah, on Raspberry Pi 5, I guess you have limited options about execution and consensus clients, and I'm curious which one you recommend or which one you use as default.
So I actually set that up quite a while ago. It was back in Gurley, and what I used was Geth and Nimbus. Nimbus is very, very lightweight, and especially if you run on like these small devices running on ARM, I would recommend Nimbus for these kind of cases. But it depends. It really depends. This machine was like even a smaller spec. It had like only 4 gigabytes of RAM, and it took like 2 months to sync. I don't, 2 months, 2 weeks to sync. So probably not the best. But if you're like have a beefier device, you can have like more options open. Maybe even Nethermind, or like depending, you would have them to experiment with all the settings Steam provides you, or the different clients. Nethermind, for example, runs great, but if it comes to pruning, you will probably have to reduce the used load while pruning. But yeah, and it is possible. You're limited, but it's definitely possible.
One more question about path to the storage, this 2 terabyte drive. When I would like to use 2 drives, one for operating system and the second one for the blockchain copy, can I provide a path where the blockchain should be stored?
If the partition is correctly mounted, this is definitely possible. Steerium will check your partitions and will use the biggest one out of default. But you can change it up the way you want.
Okay, thank you.
Do we have another question? Okay, perfect.
So. Hi, so thanks for the presentation. Idea. If, let's say you have more than one validator key, or you want to run more than one. The terminology eludes me a bit, but let's say you've got 64 ETH, you want to run 2 validators. Is it best practice to run it on 2 separate, completely separate things, or is it best practice just to use 1 setup for both keys?
So the validator client can, in theory, hold infinite validator keys. The more validator keys you import into the client, the more resources it will use to basically sign for them, because it like has to sign and then send this to the consensus client. But you will not notice this until you have like 100 keys on one node, which is quite rare for some people for obvious reasons. So I would recommend you actually to use 1 machine, because you run. The problem is, your biggest risk is the slashing risk, and if you, for example, forget which key you import in which client, you could always, like, a human error is your biggest enemy, basically. So having them on the same machine is probably, like, the best way to go in this case. And
one quick follow-up to that,
yes,
then. By running 2 validators on the same client, are you running a risk of both being slashed at the same time? Or it would only be one or the other in most cases?
You don't really run a... If you just have 1 validator client and you only have these 2 keys in this 1 client, there's no risk of getting slashed whatsoever. The risk of getting slashed is, for example, if you have both the... As you described your scenario, if you have both of these nodes running, okay, and for some reason you forget which key you had on which which client, and you import this again, okay, it's going to warn you, okay? It's going to tell you, hey, the Doppelganger protection is going to say, hey, you are like testing the last two epochs. But if you just like mindlessly click through this, okay, you're gonna get slashed just by having the key in two different validators clients active at the same time. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, slashing is basically, it's a really rare event, and it's actually really hard to like actually run into if you don't try to, as I said, be smart about it, okay, or try to have some backup setups or something like that.
If I may make just one other scenario quickly. Yes. So in certain parts of the world, let's say Southeast Asia, power outages are somewhat common. Mm-hmm. You know, I'm worried about my machine running. We lose power. It doesn't reboot properly. You know, in such a case, if you've got both of your keys on the same validator, then both would be slashed for being offline. Is that correct?
No. Slashing is never for offline. Slashing is really just the penalty you get for trying to cheat the network. In this case, if you try to, as I described, sign with the same key on two different validator clients,
yeah.
What you run into with getting offline is leaking. Which is basically your node goes offline for, let's say, your node goes offline for 24 hours, for example, or 48 hours, 72 hours. There is no real risk for you to just like actually set this up again if you don't get stressed about it, okay? You're gonna, if you lost in the 72 hours as penalty, you will get back in 72 hours. So there's really no risk as long as you don't try to, as I said, build backup system that's a way to overcomplicate it and go online at the same time. You will never run into slashing. Yeah.
You're welcome.
What do you need when staking with Lido CSM? Yeah, that's a good question, actually. Lido CSM, you basically go through the same process David showed you. The only difference is, instead of the Ethereum launchpad, you go to the Lido CSM launchpad. There's like a test Lido CSM. I could probably share this before. Maybe can show this after. Or like I'm just gonna, like if someone's interested, just come to me. I can share the link with you. You take the empty key. You go to the Lido CSM page. You upload the key in there, you pay your bond, and that's basically it, and then you just import the key. It's the same process, as I said, just instead of the launchpad, you go to the Lido CSM stuff. How many people use Ethereum? It's really, really hard to say. We don't collect any like user data. We are not interested in your user data. We don't want that. The best indicator we would have is actually, as I said, the blockchain graffiti. You only see when the validator key actually gets to produce a block, which is one in 150 days. You could estimate it. I would probably say around 1,500 based on the download numbers. But I also have to say we have a lot of because the tool makes it a little bit, maybe even too easy. We have a lot of lazy users who don't do the updates all the time. They just, like as I said, put the auto update on. It's gonna like get the client updates automatically. It's gonna take the node updates automatically. So they never show in our like actual download numbers from GitHub. And this is really the only thing: the GitHub numbers and the blockchain graffiti we can use to estimate that. Are there guides or tutorials for Ethereum? Yes, we have like a documentation page with like guides. We also have like a little bit old tutorial videos, but they basically still work the same. The UI changed a little bit between this. Maybe interesting to see what we did in the like years we working on this. You also can always come if you run into any problems whatsoever. We have a Discord server. We are 24/7 there. Basically, when we don't sleep, most of us are Europe-based. So if you write to us at like 3 a.m. in Europe time, we might not like answer directly. But as soon as we wake up, we're going to see your message in our Discord and to just come and actually try to help you. There was never a problem we couldn't fix, really. As long as you like actually give us all the information we ask for and you just communicate with each other, it's really, really easy to go through most problems. And yeah, If there's no other question, I would like end it a little bit early, if that's fine for you guys. So anyone else, anything? Okay, perfectly. I don't know, thank you everyone for listening. Thank you for your attention. If you have other questions, like personal questions or like a specific question to like setup, you can just find us. We also have like a booth on Thursday and Friday. You can try it out yourself if you want to. We have like machines here to actually try it out. We also have some nice merch if you want to come here. And yeah, thank you very much. And I hope you all guys all have a nice day.
Thank you for listening. Be sure to visit archive.devcon.org to watch and listen to all the other DevCon talks. We look forward to seeing you next time.